Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliet. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we have Culinary Class Wars Episodes 3 and 4. Open wide. Get ready to have some sweaty balls spooned into your mouth hole because we get blind taste testing in these two episodes. It's White Spoon versus Black Spoon and Mystery Ingredients. Let's dig in.
There is no word I love more than sweaty. Sweaty balls.
When I saw them get huge fried balls spoon into their mouths.
What happened? Did it turn you on or did
it? I'm just like, I am a 14-year-old boy inside. You know, I was like, balls in the mouth, balls in the mouth. Anybody else seeing this? Anybody else seeing balls in the mouth here? But the sweaty balls reference is that SNL skit from a long time ago.
Oh.
With Molly Shannon and Alec Baldwin. Oh my gosh,
she was the best.
And it was like a Christmas NPR episode. And, you know, she's like being like, Terry Gross. We'd like, hello, welcome to NPR. Right. And then Alec comes on and he brings his Christmas balls, but his last name is Sweaty. It's the best. I love to have balls in my mouth.
Oh, I know you do. Sweaty ones, indeed. SNL these days is on par with SNL from our high school days.
It is back.
Oh. The latest one was so good.
The one where they're making fun of Alex Cooper from Call Her Daddy podcast.
Even the inflection of the way she was talking was so good. She's like, we're here to talk about when to put your finger in.
Hey, daddies.
Speaking
hey, Daddy
of
gang.
Which, I have a son, but I also have a daughter, and I am just in for a lifetime of just gross ball and, you know, fart poop jokes.
Yes.
But my daughter, being the younger sister of an older brother, told me yesterday, she's like, oh, Luca and I, we were doing yoga, and then we were spinning, and we were yelling, penis butt, penis butt.
As long as she keeps beans out of her ears, she can exactly. do whatever she wants.
She can shout penis as much as she wants. But my God, this is never going to end.
I know. I grew up as the older sister. So I didn't even have an older brother influence. And yet I find balls in the mouth so funny.
Having a brother, because I have similar humor. And I think it's because you grow up with that with boy energy. Do you feel that when you see people who have a sister or brother, can you tell based on their personality?
I definitely can tell if you've had a brother.
Yeah.
Because it's, maybe it's in the humor.
You're just a little grittier, you're a little dirty. The ones who have girls tend to be a little bit more delicate in terms of humor, in terms of like the thing, like emotionally, I think a little bit more delicate.
Yes. I'm raising a second daughter and there's emotions.
Oh, are there?
Yeah.
Wow. I would have expected she would have been actually a little less emotional.
And she's actually, I'm finding, and I don't know if it's being a younger sister to a bossy older sister, but she is just very stubborn. So for Halloween, which is around the corner, we really want her to be Shohei Ohtani, the Dodger, because how cute would she be?
Oh my God.
This little Asian girl.
Yes.
I was ready to spend $250 on this costume, and she just refuses. And I was like, at 7, my older one would have caved. She'd be like, okay.
Yeah, you guys were doing family costumes up until last year.
But this one, because she lives with an older sister.
Right. And this is the one way that she can show her independence. So that's probably why she's putting her foot down. So can you reveal what she's decided to be dressed up as?
Well, there were some options on the table. So yes, we've done family costumes and I've always pushed these on my children. So last year we were all puns. So my older one was an
food puns.
Yeah. Yes. An avocado. My little one was a deviled egg. I was Kevin Bacon. My husband was French toast. The year before that, I made my little one be...
But you have to describe. Avocado, she was an avocado, but then had cat ears.
Yes. My husband wore like a French man's outfit, like a striped white and blue shirt. And then he had a French toast.
He had a toast.
Helmet.
Yeah. But the helmet, that was so good. What? How did you do Kevin?
I was Bacon. And then I wrote, my name is Kevin
The
tag.
Good.
So I had a huge bacon. And then my little one was an egg, and I put devil horns on her. So I make a lot of these costumes.
Amazing.
I know. And so it's been my project every year. The year prior, I made my little one be a Venus flytrap, and then my older one was Serena Williams. So it was Serena and Venus Williams flytrap.
That is so good.
And then my husband was a fly. So also every year, he gets shafted. He always gets the shittiest part of the family costume, and that's the running joke. So this year, I can't get a costume together. So wow. The little one was going to maybe be...
Oh, this is tragic.
I know. It is the end of an era. It is really the passing of a threshold that we'll never go back to. Oh. Does that make you want to cry?
That does. Well, my kids, especially my older one, would have never done a family costume.
Right.
He's just so stubborn. He was stubborn since he was from the moment he was born. I have always wanted to do that, but I've looked at you guys in admiration. So it breaks my heart that this is the end of an era.
I didn't know that. I should have pulled you into our costume.
I know. I could have been.
You could have been fly number two.
Yeah. So then what are the costumes this year?
The choice for my little one was to be Mudang, the baby hippo. God,
that's so good.
Right?
Yes.
So that was that option.
Except that I don't think that many people at school would get it.
Right. She would just be a cute hippo.
Yes.
She's going to be Alfredo Linguini, the Ratatouille chef.
Oh.
And so I got her a chef's costume, and then there's a little headband with a little mouse on it, which is Remy.
Oh, that's very cute.
And then guess what my husband's going to be? A rat.
A rat, of course.
I'm going to be Napoli Mafia.
You are?
Yes. From Culinary Class Wars.
What are you going to do? You're going to do like a...
I got a black... Chef's coat.
Okay.
And I got tattoo sleeves.
Oh, dang.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's, I get to pick the cool
outfit. But also very niche. I don't know that many people on the streets will get it, but.
That's okay. Still. They didn't get Serena Venus Williams flytrap either, but it's for me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your older daughter going to be?
She's going to be Medusa.
Okay. She's off in her own.
She's
world.
Off on her
she's
own.
She's done. Yeah. My son loves to read, he is obsessed with reading. And he just finished the Dog Man series and Cat. Kids series, and you know, he's just like into all these graphic novels. So I thought he'd say like he wanted to be Dog Man. No, he decided he wanted to be a bookmark. And there is like a 10-year-old inside of me that is like, you will be humiliated.
Yeah, people are going to make fun of you.
Yes. But also, I want to let him live his dream. And be as dorky as he wants to be. I'm somehow going to make it happen. And I had this idea of just like, you know, putting cardboard sandwich.
Like a sandwich board.
Yeah, sandwich board. Mm-hmm. So one in the front, one in the back, and then just hooking them.
Yeah.
And like maybe a tassel coming out of his hat.
Yeah, that'll be so cute.
And he's like, no, that's not what I wanted. He draws something out and he wants it to cover his entire face. And he wants to point up and then have the tassel... springing out of there. I'm like, this, I'm really not good at crafts.
No, you're not.
And this is beyond my scope.
So what are you going to do? And it's not like something you can order off of Spirit.
You cannot.
Spirit.
I tried. I'm like, bookmark costume, order, Timu, anywhere, please. No, nobody sells a bookmark costume because I don't think that one's flying off the shelves. So I've recruited a friend, but also my husband is a little bit more crafty. So I'm trying to get him to do it. But I am more afraid that it's not going to live up to my son's expectation because he has an image in his head that
it's going to be this, you know, perfect.
Unless we're like sewing and doing something insane, it's not going to be what it's going to be, like a homemade costume. So on Saturday, my husband and I are supposed to go to a Halloween party and we're supposed to dress up. So we like to go really low budget, low effort, but niche. Because remember last year we did the shirts from Love After Divorce.
Right.
That one of the couples had put together and it had their faces and was like, if lost, return to the other person.
Right. Benita and Jerome.
That's right. And so we did that. This year, we're going to go as the sharpshooters in the Olympics. Mm. Remember the really badass Korean girl?
So good. That's
that
great.
Had the hat backwards, a little stuffy elephant.
Are you going to have the goggles?
So I'm trying to make it out of like a hanger.
Oh,
you know,
this is gonna,
I don't know how it's gonna turn out, but I need to work on that today because the party is tomorrow. And then my husband is going as the turkey rep. Did you see him?
No.
This guy, I don't know if he won a medal, but he was representing Turkey for the sharpshooter event. Showed up in like trainers, none of the special equipment. He just had like glasses on. And he, similar to the Korean woman, he shot with one arm. You know, typically they're holding the gun with two hands, like getting a lot of leverage. This guy, one hand, shot right dead center. And so there are suspicions that he is like a hired
assassin
in Turkey. He's just so good without any effort, no special equipment. So I got my husband this turkey shirt with like black rimmed glasses, and the guy looks like he just rolled out of bed, really.
Oh, so that's it's so funny.
An easy costume. And then it's not kosher to be walking around the streets with like even a fake looking gun. So we're
not where we live.
Not where we live for sure. And so my son has these Nerf guns that are huge, you know, like yellow and green and orange. So we'll just carry those around.
That's funny.
Whatever. I'm sure nobody will get it, but we're dressing up.
Last year, I saw photos from this party and everybody was Barbie and Ken. Like literally.
Barbie and Ken and Travis Kelce and
Taylor
Swift.
Yeah. Tell me you're at a white person's party. Exactly. Telling me you're at a white person's party.
I mean, what do you think it's going to be this year?
Right. I don't know if there's anything as unifying as those two costumes this year. Beetlejuice maybe this
Beetlejuice
year?
I think will be a big one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm shocked you're not going to be Ray Gun, the Australian.
Well, that was the I wanted to be the sharpshooter and my husband to be Ray Gun.
Yes.
I'm sure he would have done it if I just bought the clothes. Yeah. But and they do sell the entire outfit.
Right. I mean, it's a green jumpsuit basically.
Yeah. With a kangaroo? Does it have a kangaroo? Or was that just a move that
she
did?
No, she just did a kangaroo. Actually, that would be much more meta to be a kangaroo in a green jumpsuit. Okay, well, that'll be really fun.
Yeah, I always get very stressed out at Halloween time because I want to have a brilliant idea and it never comes to me. And then I'm always scrambling at the last minute.
I work really hard on ours and have brilliant ideas. And then on the morning of, my husband always looking at me. He's like, you were acting crazy because it has to be executed to perfection, you know? So like, yeah, Halloween is always like the most stressful day.
Yeah. Well, they see I have that bar to live by and I'm looking at that and I'm like, here I am, like putting together a clothes hanger on my face.
While I'll be representing Napoli Mafia on the streets of our neighborhoods on Halloween, Napoli Mafia is representing himself nicely on Culinary Class Wars. We are on episodes 3 and 4. We are finally finishing up with the Black Spoons in their cooking pit challenge. We've seen now basically like 60 Black Spoons go. Like it's been a bloodbath. We're now seeing the last few Black Spoons and we're going to see who's going to make it up to the top 20. What were some highlights from these last Black Spoons for you?
Well, it had to be Sungwoo's dad. Mm-hmm. Austin Kang.
Yes.
Napoli Mafia.
I also have Fabrizio, the white spoon.
Oh.
He's like the golden retriever of the white spoons.
He's the one who had a sous chef in the pit, right?
Right. So he is up in the rafters. He's a white spoon Michelin star chef from Italy.
Yes.
But he speaks Korean.
I think he's been living in Korea.
Yes. And he's just kind of like running around. He's cheering
on.
Yeah,
he's got so much. He's definitely golden retriever energy.
He's like, Sean, are you making pasta? Sean. He's so cute. So he has a old sous chef down there, Chef Spark, and he calls him Sean. And so Fabrizio, I had to look him up because I'm like, what is up with this guy? He ran his family's Michelin star restaurant in Italy. I think he came over to Korea as kind of like a guest lecturer or something and has worked with Chef Peck before. He was been on variety shows with him. I also noticed like the older lady white spoon, the traditional Korean cook.
Yes.
She kept like tapping his hand because he was so excited about Sean. And it looks like they were on a show together. And he says in an article, she was like his second mother to him, showing him the ways of Hanshik.
Oh, wow. Is he married to a Korean woman?
Korean food. It didn't say it didn't say who he's married to.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I find it fascinating that somebody would move to a completely foreign country and then learn the language. You know, many times on this show, we are put to shame.
Oh,
because
so much
of
shame.
How many foreigners speak Korean so well.
It's so impressive.
In fact, I'm going to reference this interview a few times, but Edward Lee, Chef Edward Lee, who's the American from Kentucky, and he was on Iron Chef, Top Chef. He does an interview with Dave Chang recently. Have you listened to it?
On a podcast?
On a podcast. I mean, listen to our podcast first and then go listen to that one. But it's quite funny. And he gives a lot of insight into a lot of the backstory of what was happening and the behind the scenes. But he was like talking to one of the Australian chefs and he's like, oh, finally, I found a, you know, person who can speak English. Yes. Like, it's not just me that can't speak Korean. And then this motherfucker turns around and talks to somebody else in like full blown, like perfect Korean. And Edward Lee was saying how ashamed he felt. And Dave Chang was like, I don't think people outside of our culture actually, or outside of really like being Asian American, understand how embarrassing it is to be ethnically this and not be able to speak and see other people speak it so well. You're just like, what is wrong with me?
For like young people, even very accomplished people, to go and learn this language and live and immerse themselves is a very impressive thing. So Fabrizio is cheering on Sean, who is also known as Chef Spark. He is the other chef with black rimmed glasses. He's like the poor man's triple star.
Oh, I don't even remember what he looks like.
Yeah. I mean, he's like kind of handsome, but just pales in comparison if triple star is in the room.
But I loved that he did seafood squid ink pasta. That's like my jam. That's what I'm ordering every single time I go to
it. If I see a squid ink, it's in my mouth. On it.
But then he used the herring and he was criticized for having bones in it, which I think is an impossible feat to take them all out.
Right. So you got to be smart. Can't be thrown in bony fish.
Right. Even Fabrizio was like, he shouldn't have put that herring in there.
Like, not today.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
you already
another
had three
day.
Other seafoods.
Yes. Sungwoo's appa, back to your list.
So I went back to his YouTube to figure out, like, what is he doing on his channel? And it tracks back to almost 5 years ago, maybe, when he started it. And he doesn't even show his face. Mm. He's just teaching people how to cook. Mm. So it's like very like home cook style. But on this show, he brings out the guns. He has like a nitrogen machine, that like sorbet machine. He's got a lot going on.
Yeah, he definitely does molecular gastronomy more than anybody else.
Yes.
You're really not seeing many foams. You know, you get a lot of these fine dining chefs do a lot
that
of
that used
foams.
To be very popular, I think, like 10 years ago. Not as much anymore, but he's really leaning into that.
Right. And so he makes this watermelon salad that everybody doubts is going to be good because it's January and it's not watermelon season. He puts a little vanilla, a little sugar, vacuum seals it, and Chef Peck is so impressed by the flavor that he infuses into this watermelon. So he does very well. He gets to move up to the table. You mentioned the chef of all trades, Austin Kang.
Master of none. That was brutal. I gotta say, watching this made me like Austin a little bit more because he's quite humble. He recognizes that people only see him as a pretty face and he wants to be recognized for his culinary skills.
Yes. And he's very like about Chef On, like, I really want him to taste my food. Yes. And I think he was hoping he could connect with him as
an American, as a Californian.
Yes. So he does an LA kaibi dish.
Slash Mexican.
Yeah. So he does like a salsa. Chef On tastes it. He says, mashing a bunch of ingredients together doesn't make it a dish. Quote unquote, some bullshit comes
out. Bullshit comes out. I was like, that was so harsh.
He says it in English just to make sure Austin understands.
He's like, you pretty boy, you're forcing your concept.
I don't think Chef On likes pretty boys. They're good for TV, but Chef On doesn't want them in his kitchen. Lastly, of the black spoons, it's Napoli Mafia. He apparently has a very popular pasta restaurant in Seoul. Pasta is his thing. He makes a beautiful plate, the story of Napoli. He has like little black pasta trash bags. It's very beautiful. He has lots of sauces.
Yeah, and he used to work in Naples, which I find really interesting because Naples is not a really it's a popular tourist destination, but not someplace that you would think that somebody would go to train to learn how to cook. But he worked at this Michelin star restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, where he gets his name from, Napoli. Have you ever been to Naples?
I haven't. And I would think that Naples is more popular for its pizza.
It is, right. I went to Naples as a stopover before going to Ravello, which is near the coast, for my honeymoon. So we stayed there one night, just one night, because we needed to get the train or whatever the next morning. And it was in the middle of the night and it was very gritty. So I get what he's saying. It doesn't feel like the Rome or the Florence.
Yeah. It's just a city.
It's just, and you're right. The pizza was incredible there, but Napoli Mafia made this beautiful dish and then he got Chef On to judge his food. What did you think about the judgment?
So Chef On says the pasta is so delicious, but he takes issue with the flowers that Chef Napoli Matvey has used to decorate the plate. And so he puts him on hold. So Chef On says he hates useless crap with zero flavor to make a dish look better. Is Chef On a meticulous master of his craft? Or is he actually just really fucking annoying? This guy has no stand. He's not clear about his standards. Yes. Is it flavor? Clearly not. Is it about intention? Is it about flowers? Like, what is it?
Everyone says they wanted Chef On to judge them, but I don't think that he had a very clear idea of what he was looking for. Chef Peck, yes. Don Juan, was like, I want flavor. Does it taste good? Then yes, you are moving forward. And so I was really annoyed by this. And then I went to go look at the Michelin star restaurant that Napoli Mafia used to work at, Dani Maison in Naples. On the website, it's all food covered in flowers. I'm not kidding. You go to the menu and it's just pictures of food covered in flowers. Like, that's a thing. Like, yeah. Chefs do that. I mean, restaurants do that. And I feel like to knock someone off after saying their food was so delicious.
Right. That's a way for a chef to express their, like, what they want to put into their meal. And I think he had a whole story. So the flowers, there's a story behind it.
Yeah.
And Chef On is just like, no, that it doesn't, that's not a thing you should do. And I'm just like,
But then also, if that is true, like, if you're presenting food to be beautiful, like, even the presentation and how it's placed, like, should that even matter to you then? Because that's kind of a useless act, right? You just dump it all on the plate then.
Yeah, yeah. So what's even the point of plating is what you're saying, right? Okay, but I think Chef On is really annoying because he's just like, his standards are all over the place. And I think he's actually really hard on these fine dining chefs. I think he has a different standard for these guys, and it's a little unfair. I do have to agree with Chef On about flowers, though. It's like in Hawaii, you can't get a god dang banana macadamia nut pancake without a plumeria flower on it. And then my kid wants to wear it behind her ear.
Yeah,
and now she's got whipped cream in her hair. Yep. And then it's brown by the end of brunch and I'm tossing it. Like Hawaii, enough with the freaking flowers on my pancakes. I see where Chef On is coming
but
from.
But I think a lot of the flowers that Napoli Mafia was using are edible. So just pop it in your mouth.
Just eat, chomp, chomp, okay? He puts Chef Napoli Mafia on hold. He ultimately gets to move on. Thanks to Chef Peck, who has his head on his shoulders. And so that's it. A few of these guys round out the rest of the top 20 black spoons. We finally move on from this challenge. I think, you know, one of the hard parts about having 100 people in the beginning is that it takes so long. It's taken us basically 3 episodes to finally get to like a battle.
Yes. And from what I understand, it wasn't as quick as they make it seem. You know, like, there's all this time that they go to prep, right? Then they got to get their ingredients. So I think it was like really prolonged.
One of the very impressive things about this show, and I had read that Chef Peck initially didn't want to judge, is because he was saying that it is so difficult to set up so many cooking stations. You've got to get water, gas, electricity, all running into these different stations and working at the same time.
That is a good point.
Right? And so
how are they getting water through all of the stations in one room?
Yeah, and there's like refrigerators on the side and there's pantries. Like, it's a lot of coordination to produce these types of shows. So it's an amazing feat that they got all of these stations to work at the same time. We are now 20 versus 20, black spoon versus white spoon one-on-one battle. Only 20 will make it out. So if we're thinking about physical 100, it's like the one-on-one matches in the cage match, but instead of a cage match, you're getting a cook-off. The black spoons who've made it to the top 20 now get to challenge the white spoons. Then they each pick a mystery fridge that has an ingredient they both have to cook. Then they wheel in their creations. They're like dim sum ladies. They walk into a cave where the judges are sitting blindfolded.
I gotta say, that's so creative.
Never do they do blind judging on these shows.
And for it to be literally blind, like, you don't even get to see the person who made it. You don't get to see the dish.
Yeah.
It's just open wide.
It's the most fair. Now we're evening the playing field. Right?
It is, but my gripe is they should have brought in another person. Because when you have two people and then you're just arguing over who is right and trying to convince the other person, I don't think that's as fair as having another judge.
Right. Just break the tie.
In fact, I heard that Roy Choi was supposed to be a judge.
Oh, wow.
He was on the Dumbfounded podcast and I saw a clip where he said that they called him and they were like, oh, yeah, so then like, you do you speak Korean? He's like, no.
Oh.
And such so, a shame. Yeah, they didn't let him on.
Does Dave Chang speak Korean?
No, he says his Korean is worse than his Japanese.
Oh, wow.
And I think they did reach out to Dave Chang, too.
Yeah.
So a lot of these Korean-American chefs were getting calls. And according to Ed, he's like, yeah, I just told them I spoke Korean. And then 10 minutes into the call, they're like, you don't speak Korean.
His Korean's actually not bad. Do we think he practiced Edward Lee before he
said,
got there?
I mean, I don't want to like regurgitate the entire interview with Dave Chang, but he said that he hired a tutor, a young tutor who was studying to be a minister, and he just got yelled at him all day. But he had a guy in his, or a woman or somebody in his ear. But he's like, the person would be talking for 15 minutes, and then in my ear, I'd hear, you got seafood. So he's like, the fuck? What? So of course, Ed is just such a nice, good guy. If you watch this interview too, you're like, gosh, he said, what a kind person. But Dave was like, you were at such a disadvantage, you know, they like didn't just set you up for success. So that was my gripe. I thought if they had one more person that could break the tie, that would have made this maybe more efficient.
Yeah. The judges are sitting there in this cave. Like, why is it a cave? They look like the Dread Pirate Roberts from The Princess Bride. Yes. And then they're getting spoon-fed by these other men. It's like toddlers getting like the airplane, you know?
Say,
are you ready? They also open their mouths so wide. You can see their tonsils, how big they open their mouths.
It looks like Chef On is cracking his jaw. And then meanwhile, Baek-jung-won is like nothing to him. He just, his mouth is naturally very wide.
I feel like they're all going to get TMJ after this. So the first white spoon to get called up to be challenged is Choi Hyun-suk. He seems like the king of the white spoons. He's like their leader.
Yeah.
He's clearly everybody looks up to this guy.
And he was on a show called Please Take Care of My Refrigerator a long time ago. Have you heard of this show? It is just so, I find it's weird, but also fascinating and so impressive that they come up with these really random odd premises.
Yeah.
So it was a variety show where they would bring the contents of your refrigerator, like if you were a celebrity, into the studio.
Okay.
And they would literally open up a refrigerator that had all the contents of your fridge. And then you would have to cook. And there was a challenge.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it is fun, but it's so odd. Anyway, he was on that show. I don't know if he was a judge or if he was the chef, but this refrigerator reveal is very familiar to him.
So he gets called up first. And it's interesting to see the order by which the white spoons get called up, right? So he's called up first, which I think is a show of respect. And then we kind of see some other white spoons get called up. So you think the order is Lu Ching Lai, and then it's Jung Ji Sun, and then it's Choi Hang Ruk. You're seeing kind of what the producers or maybe the public would perceive as order to go up as respect.
Yes.
But actually, the editors put Edward Lee later. But if you watch Edward Lee get up, when he's actually challenging, there's only two empty seats behind him. So actually, Edward Lee is number two.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I found it very interesting that while you're saying he was at a disadvantage, they treat him with respect in this show. Because if the producers are putting him right after Choi Hyun-suk, like, they must think very highly of him.
Right.
Watching Korean hierarchy is so fascinating to me.
It is. And it is interesting because it's such a hierarchical society. It was in its origin and it still is to this day. I thought it was funny because at the very end of this episode, they do a little preview. Mm-hmm. And there was one snippet where somebody says, who do you think you are talking to me in 반말, which is, you know, when you talk like familiarly, like without respect, like as a friend would. Somebody says that, but they don't show who it is. And they didn't translate it that way. But that's a thing where if you're older or you're like Choi Hyun-suk and you're like the senior of the group, you're demanding respect. I think it's about to get snippy.
So of these duels that we see in episodes 3 and 4, which ones stood out to you?
For me, who stood out was Edward Lee. Obviously, I've just been talking about him. I'm clearly obsessed with him, but I also like Meat Master. And the funny thing about Meat Master is his name in Korean is Gogi Gangpae, which Gangpae means gangster.
Right.
You know, wouldn't that have been a better name? Like Meat Master is not as impressive as Meat Gangster.
Their ingredient was, what was it?
Mugunji.
What is that?
It's really aged fermented kimchi. So like not the kind that we eat as a banchan, as a side dish. this is the kind of kimchi that you would put into your kimchi jjigae.
Like a stew.
Or a stir fry, because it's so fermented. It's really soft. It's very, very pungent.
When they open those refrigerator doors, I bet that whole warehouse, whole soundstage must have just stank. So do you use it in your cooking?
It's, you know, you would either have to let your kimchi ferment for that long, or you could buy it. It's not something that I buy regularly, you know?
Well, my husband will, if he's making a kimchi jjigae, he'll take the kimchi and put it outside and just let it ferment.
Outside of the house?
Yeah, outside of the house. Yeah, just right here. And
so your neighbors must love that.
We get gold spoons over here. We also get premium kimchi.
Delivered from Korea.
Hand delivered. My in-laws, when they come, they bring, it's called Supex kimchi. It's from the place where they sell it, where my father-in-law used to work. And so they still go there and they'll bring like about 20 packets of it. And it's like vacuum sealed. And so.
Wait, did they bring you some? I know your father-in-law was just in town.
Yeah,
did he bring you some?
Yeah. And so they'll check it in. And I'm just always worried that
it's going to explode.
And just get everywhere. Start. But if it's on a Korean Air flight or a...
Everybody would have enjoyed it.
Exactly. It's like,
ooh, what's for lunch?
Yeah, I'm sure they see exploding kimchi in the bulkhead.
And in the bathroom.
Yeah. Gross. It's like this one time I took the Chinatown bus from New York City to Washington, D.C., I don't know if the Chinatown bus exists anymore post-pandemic.
I wonder, but it was so cheap, right?
So cheap. And I get to DC and we open the storage below for everyone's luggage to come out. And there are just crabs walking around.
No.
And like no one is fazed. Everyone just collects, or the person just collects their crabs.
Get back in here.
Put them back in your bag. You're going to go get eaten right now. And nobody was fazed on the Chinatown bus. Yeah.
Wait, can you talk about the time you went on the Mexican airline and they were serving.
Yeah. Okay. So we took like I feel like they're the Southwest of Mexico.
Right.
They're the Ryanair of Mexico. Yes. Volaris. They were serving cup ramen. And so they're passing along the aisle and I did not partake because that's crazy. And so they're just slurping it up. I go to the bathroom later, and this is why we don't have cup ramen on airplanes, is because I go to the bathroom and because they can't get rid of their liquid anywhere, they pour it down the toilet. And so when you go to the bathroom after the snack period, there is chunks of
corn and carrots
and like little noodles just lining the toilet because there's no water to rinse it down. Right. It's just air. I've never peed on top of carrots before. Oh, and I did on that bathroom. Edward Lee wins. He does a beautiful salad and really impresses the judges. Meet Gung Pei is like, my dish was good. I just chose an opponent that outclassed me. Like, that's a really...
That is a very classy,
like, self-aware thing to say. Yeah. And even afterward, Edward Lee says, look me up on Instagram.
I know.
Slide into my DMs. It's very kind.
These judges start out with the objective that they're going to judge based on which dish is more delicious and better utilize the main ingredient. But I think what you notice as we see more of the one-on-ones is that it's the people who are innovative with their ingredient that get noticed. Like people who do really traditional dishes and make good food don't get noticed.
Even the traditional, like older Korean white spoon, she beats the younger...
like restaurateur.
Genius restaurateur, right? Who kind of runs like a small bar.
Yeah.
I kind of doubt these older, you know, and there's age bias here. Right? Totally. I doubt these older chefs.
Like they're stuck in their ways. They're going to do what they've done.
But like that woman, this older Korean woman who also just like kind of looks like a grandma, like a kind elderly woman. Yep. She shows us that you can still beat the young ones at her age. It's an interesting thing that there's a lot of women versus women so far.
That's true.
Right? We haven't seen a man go against a woman. And granted, there aren't very many women in the competition, right? Which is a reflection
I would say more women on the white spoon side than there are on the black spoon side.
Yeah. And it's a real reflection of what it takes to be a chef. You know, it's not very women friendly. I looked up the stat. Only about 5% of chefs in America are women.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The irony of that, you know, because they expect women to be in the kitchen at home.
Right. but they can't make it.
Let them elevate.
Be in a commercial kitchen.
Yeah, in a commercial kitchen.
Definitely. We've even had it here. There's a lot of sexual harassment. Like in our neighborhood, that pizza shop that was really popular, like got taken, Me Too'd.
Yes.
Have you ever read Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain?
My husband has a book. I've never read it though.
Yeah, it's a really, I think it's one of the first insights because it was written so long ago before we've had all these reality shows. It's an insight into what it takes to be a line cook and what it means to come up in that world. And Anthony Bourdain's basically like, it's so hard. It's just long hours. You're on your feet. So we see that, I think, reflected in this population here. But the two women that I thought were interesting were the two Chinese girls, obviously. They get dried radish greens.
Have you had this before?
No, I think this show could have done a little bit more for the international audience. Yes. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I think another, because we're becoming, you know, professional producers at this point, or critics, but they could have done a better job of explaining even the ingredients. I noticed they would write it in Korean, but not in English, like on the side. So radishes have a sprout at the end, and they're green and get very long. And what they do is, I think they boil, blanch, and then dry it, like, out in the villages. So it gets crispy. And then you can then rehydrate and stir fry it as a banchan, or then make it with doenjang, with the soybean paste and make it into a soup.
I think I'm familiar with the flavor of it though, because the goddess, who is the black spoon, she makes a fish broth, and then the judges say, oh, there's suan cai in here. Suan means...
It's a mustard green,
mustard green, right? Yeah, it's sour, and then you put it on your soup noodles and stuff like that to kind of offset the richness of.
So you're saying you guys originated that vegetable, and then
we don't need to litigate this, but obviously everything is from China. So the goddess is very confident. She starts butchering a giant fish with this huge Chinese butcher knife. And the black spoon dudes are watching, and they're basically like getting boners.
They're getting wet.
They love watching this woman butcher a fish with a huge knife. She cooks a delicious ass looking fish stew.
It looks so good. And it's milky colored. I almost can taste the savoriness of it. Can I ask you a question though? They were playing like Chinese music in the background.
I know.
I'm always curious, is that considered racist, or like, is that appropriate in this setting?
It was really like ding da da dang 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 dang.
Like, an homage. Where is that music even from? You know, like from the 1600s. Like, nobody plays that music anymore.
A lot of kids, and I'm almost wanting my kids to learn the eru, you know, the the stand-up string instrument. You know, everyone plays piano. You're not going to get into college with playing the piano.
For sure.
But you can get in college playing the air room.
You won't have any friends, but
yeah,
you'll get into college.
My kids can be friends with your bookmark
son. Oh, yeah, for sure. He's going to need
If he starts playing some random-ass instrument and is a bookmark, boy.
His saving grace is that he's pretty good at sports. Mm-hmm. So he can... He can straddle both quite well, but I'm like, if he did not have sports, he would be the biggest dork. And like, I went to volunteer in his classroom yesterday, and the teacher would ask questions. He's the only person raising his hand. Oh, every single question. I'm like, just let other kids do it, you know? But he's just so eager.
Queen of Dim Sum, she makes a basu. This is a... traditionally like a sweet potato is usually used, and then they kind of like blanch the sweet potato, and then they like pour this like kind of sugar on it, and then they ice water bath it. It's like crispy kind of sugar on the outside, and then when you pull it up, it has strands of sugar. Queen of Dim Sum does is she creates a sugar string nest, and she stir fries the dry radish greens as a meatball. So here we have these huge meatballs, like massive. I wanted them to cut these meatballs. When they started spooning it into these chefs' mouths, it's like, we couldn't have just like cut half. But yeah, so.
You know you like a big ball in your mouth.
Sure do.
So then they go into the judge's room. They eat this massive ball. And they're
a giant, kind of sticky, hairy ball.
Yeah, literally a piece of the hair of the sugar hair is sticking out of Baek Jung-won's mouth.
He's like, yum. I've had this flavor before.
They eat it, and then it turns out the vote is 1-1. Mm-hmm. So Baek Jung-won has voted for the Queen of Dim Sum with the basu, and then Chef An has voted for the soup. But Chef Peck is saying, oh, you know, this is such an innovative and delicious dish. But Chef An is like, what is the point of the basu? I mean, I guess to his credit, he's like, I don't want something pointless. Like, you literally just like put that on top, but it wasn't cohesive with the rest of it. It was just like a show. I don't want to commit woman to woman crime, but she's got a bit of an RBF.
Oh, this girl is very attitude-y. She's standing there watching the fish stew get served. Like, are we done here?
And she's like, that dish, whatever.
That's basic.
So basic. Yeah.
I know. She's and like, then, can we go?
The goddess of Chinese cuisine is looking at Queen of Dim Sum and like looking to connect, looking for reassurance. Queen of Dim Sum will not even look at her.
Oh, yeah. No, she is clearly feels like this girl is beneath her. And I don't know. It's so right. Like Edward Lee is like, DM me. And then Queen of Dim Sum, like, this is a woman who is following in your footsteps. Like, she's, you're her hero. Like, she could be the next you. And it doesn't feel like there's that camaraderie or help from a Sunbae to this, right. You know, junior.
I mean, she's seeing it as a bit of, like, a zero-sum game. There's only room for one, and right. That's me.
Yeah. Ultimately, they give it to Queen of Dim Sum. Another notable battle for me was Triple Star versus the North Korean fine dining chef, mostly because North Korean fine dining to me sounds like an oxymoron. It's like the literal only one in the world.
They dine on grass.
I'm also like, aren't you nervous, sir, that you're going on TV that Kim Jong-un is going to watch it and be like, bring me that man.
Oh my gosh, he's going to become his personal chef.
Yeah, capture him. Bring me him to cook me food. Also, the North Korean chef uses a pink fan to fan his pork skewers. Why a pink fan?
Well, what is your deal with it? Because it's pink? It's or just, because it's a fan?
But like, yeah, are there not more modern ways?
Right. He could have got an electric fan.
Yeah, yeah. Or just like use a pan. Like it doesn't, what is this show here?
So he and the Triple Star got ulgyeopsal, which is skin on pork belly. And he just grilled it in soybean paste. I think that's what he did. I mean, yeah. It looked like it would be tasty, but again, nothing
inventive.
I looked this guy up and he has a restaurant that serves sundae omakase. Do you know what sundae is?
Isn't that blood sausage?
Blood sausage.
Uh-huh.
And it's an omakase it's an omakase restaurant with just sundae.
With just blood sausage? How many ways?
Yeah, I don't know. But then I'm intrigued. I guess in North Korea, uh-huh. Obviously pre-war, the blood sausage had a lot of things stuffed in it, like different minced meats and vegetables. Now it's like just glass noodles mm-hmm. with, I don't know,
blood.
Although the North Korean chef is a white spoon, mm-hmm. he's going up against a guy who has worked at only Michelin star restaurants.
It's interesting that Triple Star picked this guy. Like Triple Star didn't walk up for Choi Hyun-suk, right? Number one.
Main strategy.
Strategy, yeah. So... if you were Triple Star, what would you have done? You know you're very skilled, but you want to get far.
Yeah, I would not have gone up against Choi Hyun-suk because he's the like premier chef.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go up against people who I know could beat me.
Right, because these first, I don't know how many we saw, 6 to 8 battles, these are all the top white spoons, right? They are all getting called up first. So you know that they are, of all the white spoons, the top tier. And so actually, the body count at this point is like 7 white spoons to 0 black spoon wins. And that's really interesting because we'll see what the back half looks like. Triple Star is just fine, just chopping up his
I mean, those knife skills.
Oh, my goodness. Chop me up.
I don't need bowls in my mouth. I need knife skills.
Uh-huh. He makes these really interesting drumsticks. He sticks the bone back in it. It looks very Fred Flintstone style, but it must taste delicious. He puts an epoise cheese sauce on it.
Oh, yeah.
Have you had epoise before?
No.
It is so stinky.
Oh,
is it known to be one of the stinkiest French cheeses. It's like a soft cheese, but it's actually banned from being imported into the U.S. because they don't let you bring an unpasteurized cow's cheese.
I see. Not because of the smell.
It would be like on Air France. It's the equivalent of bringing kimchi.
on Coreana.
Triple Star wins. And then the last battle that really stood out to me was Sungwoo's dad and Choi Kang-rok. He's Master Chef Korea. He's wearing glasses and a hat.
Yes, he's this existentialist.
He's very unassuming.
He's so unassuming. He looks like he should be a black chef, just like in his demeanor.
Yes.
And he's like, you know, we all leave this place eventually.
Yeah.
This set's going to come down. It's an illusion.
Yes.
And he said this in Korean, but they didn't translate. He's like, let's not become an NPC.
A non-player. What is it? Character.
He's just like, whatever. I'm going to put my best self forward and it is what it is, which love that attitude.
Love him. I also love that Sungwoo's dad comes out with the Paco jet and all these crazy machines. And everyone in the Black Spoons are like, that's like $20 million worth of machines that this guy brought with him for all these bells and whistles. Meanwhile, the White Spoon.
He's got a knife.
And a pot.
Yeah.
Their ingredient is perilla oil. Do you use perilla oil?
I do. I have a small bottle of it because it's quite pricey. So the difference between perilla oil and sesame oil is one is from the sesame seed. The other one is from the perilla seed. So all from the same plant.
Right.
But different flavor. Yeah. I mean, the perilla is more intense. Uh-huh. So you use it as a seasoning. So I found it shocking that they were using it to saute because I don't even think it has a high smoke point. So I don't think you're supposed to do that. But I guess that's how you infuse the flavor. Mm-hmm. Jin from BTS had made this buckwheat noodle like soba dish by just adding soy sauce and the perilla oil with gennip, with the perilla leaves and with some soy sauce and I don't know, sugar or whatever. So good. So tasty.
How do you know?
Mix that up.
Oh, you've made it.
I mean, BTS Jin has come to my house and he served it to me.
No. I was like, wait, what are you talking about? You tried?
He was all live making it and then it like blew up as like a recipe, which is not, it's not even a real recipe, but.
So you made it and it was really good.
I made it. It's very tasty. And that is what Sungwoo's dad is sort of referencing when he makes that buckwheat cake. Because he's like, I make this noodle that has these flavors.
I thought
his dish was amazing.
It looked so impressive. Yeah. So he makes a cake that has perilla oil in it. He makes ice cream again with his molecular gastronomy. Yes. And I think where he went wrong is potentially he made this ice cream so that it wouldn't melt quickly.
Yes.
And that is the fault of these shows is that you can't make ice creams.
Right.
Because the time between
you making it and you arriving to that room
station
is probably longer than even they're showing us.
Right.
Actually, Ed Lee was saying that when he judges on Top Chef and whatnot, they'll be like, do not expect hot food. Like, don't judge it for its temperature because there's sitting around just waiting.
Yeah. And that's why, like, soups actually make sense.
Right.
You can keep a soup hot.
Yeah.
You can't keep a main dish hot. Like, it'll overcook it.
And then Che Kang-nok made radish steak.
It looked so good.
It did.
It's just simple and good.
Yeah, so simple. And, like, the radish, it looked like it was cooked in a way that I've never seen before.
Right.
Right? Because we use, it's like boiled down to like the point.
Mush.
And so this was, to me, was so unique. I think the judges, they were 1-1 too in this one. Ultimately, they said it was because the ice cream wasn't the right consistency.
So just goes to show you don't need liquid nitrogen and flashy tricks. You can just put a radish on a plate and do it well and win. Time for our segment, the Daily Dish. What was the dish that you wanted to try?
I would have to say it is either Edward Leeds mugunji salad with the persimmon and pear, or to be predictable, because he's my favorite, Triple Stars Flintstone bone.
Right. Oh my God. That reminds me of a story about you.
Oh God.
You eating a bone.
God.
One of the first times you ever came over for dinner, we're like still getting to know each other as people, like as a 360 full view person.
I mean, we still are, yes.
Yes. You came over and there were two other girlfriends, and these other two other girlfriends love to tell long involved stories. And my husband had made us all kaibi with a lot of
like a towering plate of kaibi, you know?
And so we're all sitting around and then these two girls are telling us stories. And so me and my husband are just like, super engaged in these stories.
Well, actually, what you have to say is you ended up falling asleep in your daughter's bedroom. The other one had to go to the bathroom and then like did not come out. So it was just the three of us, okay?
Uh-huh, yes.
With this towering plate of kaibi.
And we turn around, one story's over, and you have, I didn't even get to
say anything. Like, you know, I couldn't get a word in edgewise. So I'm just sitting there doing
what you do
what
best.
I do
which
best.
Which is housing down kaibi. There is the pile of bones on your plate. There must have been 20 little pieces and none of us have taken a bite. It was classic. It was quintessential Juliet. And we turn around, we're like, what just happened? Where did that, when did you do that? My husband was like, last week's episode, he's like, you guys really come down on fine dining, but that's because you guys eat like we're like there's no tomorrow. He's like, he always is like, oh, you're a pig. A little pig. Pig. Anyway, so you would finish
that's
off
right.
16 of those drumsticks.
Again, having grown up with a brother, I had to eat quickly because wasn't fast, it was all gone. And my parents were mostly pescatarian, vegetarian growing up. So once in a while we would have meat. And when that would happen, I'd be like, oh man, there's no more. And then my brother had hidden it all behind his plate. Ha-ha. So now, you know, I eat like it's a competition.
Truly.
All right. What about you? What was daily dish for you?
I was interested in the watermelon salad. Chef Peck's reaction to it was so impressed that I wanted to get a bite of that. In the white spoon, black spoon challenge, who do you wish moved on that didn't?
It would have to be the goddess of Chinese cuisine.
I know.
I was so bummed. Also, she's very pleasant to look at. Mm-hmm. You know, objectification corner. I think she's beautiful.
Yes. And I think giving that Queen of Dim Sum a run for her money in the later challenges would have also been very interesting to see. Because once this girl goes, there's nobody from a female perspective
to
challenge her.
Because even the younger restaurateur is gone. Mm-hmm. There aren't many Black Spoon females
left. Yeah.
What about you?
I agree with that. I also wanted to see more of Sungwoo's dad.
Yes.
He has a little bit of the theatrics that everybody else is kind of missing.
Yes.
So it would have just been fun to watch that.
And he's like a true home chef. He doesn't own a restaurant. I think if somebody like that could have advanced and done well, would have been so exciting to see.
Were there any dishes from any of the battles that you were inspired to make for your fam?
Ooh. I don't think I'd be able to make any of these, actually.
Well, actually, I was going to say aglio e olio.
Oh.
I looked it up. Actually, some sites say it's better to make oil pastas like that.
From a box?
Box pasta. With a dry
makes
pasta.
Sense. That makes sense, right?
It soaks it up better than a wet pasta.
Yeah, and it's easier to get al dente than, I think, fresh pasta.
Yeah. So I think I will try to make that for my family next week.
Oh, dang.
Easy like enough.
Wait, are you going to do it in the pan?
No. I'm just going to make regular pasta.
Okay.
Barilla.
I don't know if my kids would eat this, but I would love to make the shiregi sea bream soup that the goddess of Chinese cuisine made.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
To make a potent fish broth is tough, I think. But good luck to you.
Yeah.
Invite me over. I want to come try that.
This is maybe my husband will get a boner watching me, you know, chop up a fish.
Mary F. Kill. Mary.
I think that I would marry the old Korean lady.
Yeah.
She looks like she would make me some delicious food.
And just like wrap you up in a hug.
I know, and tap me when I'm like panicking.
I would marry the white spoon Choi Kang-rak, the Master Chef Korea. He's just skilled. He knows life goes on. He's just a very wise, egoless white spoon. And compared to a lot of the egos we're seeing in the white spoon, I really appreciate that. F.
It's got to be triple star again.
Oh my God. You have to
move obsessed.
On.
I'm obsessed.
You have to move on from him.
But you know, it's I think also because I'm rewatching these sets of episodes that I've already watched.
Uh-huh.
So I'm getting another dose. But I haven't moved on since episode 4.
Right.
So I don't know. You must have seen another side of him because you're over him.
I'm not over him. I'm just saying like, you know, you gotta
diversify.
Diversify. I think I would F Queen of Dim Sum. She's just got kind of this attitude.
Oh, God.
She'd be rough in the sheets. She'd make me some sweet potato dessert after with some sugar.
She'd put on a show for sure.
Yes. Kill.
I think I would kill the North Korean chef.
Oh, gosh.
I mean,
what
he's
are you?
Not North Korean. He is not North Korean. I mean,
he's
of course,
on our side of the
Korean.
DMZ.
Yes.
He's okay.
He is. His family is from North Korea, as is mine.
Yes.
So it's not about that.
It's not an anti-communist stance you're taking here.
I just, there was nothing about him that I...
Like, really? Sundae? That's how you're here as a white spoon? Come on.
And I thought he was quite condescending to Triple Star in his interview. And I was like, Fool, you don't know what you're up against.
No, do not.
Do not badmouth my husband.
Exactly. I'd kill Chef On for this flowers nonsense. He needs to get it together.
He's starting to grate at me.
What I do like about the blind taste testing is that it does take away Chef An's power. You know, he can't judge based on nonsense. Yes.
Right.
And so it does kind of even the playing field amongst the judges, which I like.
I think he has a really refined palate, though.
Yes. You can tell. He can just taste.
Picks up flavors really quickly.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I respect him for that.
I know.
But we'll kill him.
Kill him anyway.
Anyway.
All right. That was Culinary Class Wars episodes 3 and 4. We will be back with episodes 5 and 6. More White Spoon, Black Spoon one-on-one battles. Have a great week, everyone. Have a happy Halloween. Enjoy yourselves. Don't steal too much of your kids' candy. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.